90% of the time when a story is not landing, it is because the person telling the story is keeping it generalized, is playing it safe, is doing all the things we've been taught, especially for women to be good girls, to not destroy or to damage, to say the right things at all the right times. But when it comes to story activation, these are the things that actually can work against us. I probably have a catalog of hundreds of things that you should do to activate your stories. So I'm going to walk you through the top 12 in my perspective that we really need to know and understand.
Welcome to the Speaker Driven Business Podcast for the entrepreneurs, the subject matter experts, and the difference makers who want to unlock the power of speaking driven strategies to accelerate impact, influence, and revenue. I'm your host, Jacqueline Nagel, and this is the place for straight talking, easy to implement 20-minute or less business speaking and communications insights and lessons, which will help you break through from unheard of to in demand. Let's go.
Episode 25, Story Shaping 102, The Secrets of Story Activation. The reason why I'm taking great big deep breaths is because this is one of my favorite things that I do with my clients in our programs, in our hot seats, when I'm reviewing scripts. It's where I go into puppeteer mode. And the reason being is that this is so important. I call it story activation because that's actually what we want to do. We want to activate a response in people. We want to keep them locked into us. We want to make sure, yes, we create trust and connection, but we also want to make sure that we remove moments of disconnect where we can actually allow them to disconnect from the stories we're sharing. And through that, actually erode the level of trust, actually impact the level of connection. We want to be able to tell stories and activate them in such a way that people lean into them, that people put themselves in beside us in those stories. And there are so many ways that we accidentally deactivate our stories. It can be in the words we use. It can be in a word that we need to change. It can be in a sentence that we use. It can be in how we generalize and don't land specific details. There are so many things that I work with. And what I do know to be true after reviewing thousands and thousands of scripts and working with thousands of people in rooms and programs, what I do know to be true is this. The more we can actually bring in these secrets of story activation, the more powerful our stories land. 90% of the time when a story is not landing and a speech isn't landing within my world, it is because the person telling the story is keeping it generalized, is playing it safe, is doing all the things we've been taught to be, especially for women to be good girls, to not destroy or to damage, to say the right things at all the right times. But when it comes to story activation, these are the things that actually can work against us. So I think I probably have a catalog of hundreds of things that you should do to activate your stories. But we've got a limited time here at the moment. So I'm going to walk you through the top 12 in my perspective that we really need to know and understand to be able to fully activate our stories and to be able to fully allow people to lean in and to build that bridge to trust and connection that we're all seeking through our speaking. So the first thing is, don't teach. Do not teach in stories. Weave a fairy tale. Invoke the power of the fairy tale. The moment we start to interrupt our stories to teach, we actually lose connection. Because at this point, all we're trying to do in our stories is to build trust and connection. But as soon as we start to teach, we become the authority at the front of the room. We raise the inner rebel child in the unconscious minds of our audience that are sitting there going, you can't tell me what to do. We haven't built enough trust and connection with them yet to start teaching. Do not teach in storytelling mode. We use stories to land the teaching, which is why I keep referencing fairy tales. So the first one is don't teach. The second one is I want you to get it all out and bring it all back. A true story is a full story. All stories are full stories. And what I mean by that is you need to get that story out in full and then bring it back into those story structures that we've been speaking about in episode 24 by identifying the chunks that you need to speak into that land of the message. So get it all out first. Tell your story in full first and bring it all back. What we're also finding really important when people have big lived experience or workplace experiences that they are wanting to share is that we actually have to get it out in full first, so that you can actually, for the first time sometimes, hear it out loud And only then are you able to bring it back to its most powerful and the things that will be in service to your audience. So number two is get it all out and bring it back to its most powerful. Number three is you need to drop us into moments and keep to the through line, keep to the blue apple, keep to the controlling argument, keep to the central idea, but drop us into moments, which is also where the structure matters because it's dropping us into moments. And it's really interesting because there is a speaker in the UK who tells a story about his son catching a train, him and his son catching the train for a day for an activity to do. It is an 11-minute story that talks about Elliot's magic ticket, and it focuses on the beautiful simplicity and experience of a train ticket seller understanding how important this train ticket, this train journey was to his son. It is an 11-minute story which drops us into moment after moment and yet only tells us about one event. It is powerful and exquisite. Drop us into moments. Keep to the through line, absolutely, but drop us into moments. Take us right inside of them. And that leads into the next thing, number four. You must create the space. You must allow the audience to put themselves inside the story itself, right? And in creating that space, which is what we do between the chunks in those story structures, in creating that space, we allow our audience to breathe. We allow our audience to think about their own stories. We allow our audience to step inside us. If we keep them moving fast through lots and lots of detail with no moments that we drop them into with space in between, then they cannot join us in our world of our story. So that's number four. Number five is specificity creates connection and credibility. All the time, I see people generalizing, right? We need to be specific. And what I mean by this is don't tell me you're walking down the street. What street? Don't tell me you jumped in a car. What car? Don't tell me they. Who were they? Right? This is really, really important. Don't say it was a day. What day was it? Was it a winter's day, a summer's day, a Sunday, a Monday? Was it a day in time? Like, what day was it? Right? What time was it? Right? Specificity creates connection and credibility. We had a thing recently where somebody wanted to speak about the psychiatrist they were using, but not the full name. So we found a way to do it, right? It's really important that you give specificity because what happens when we generalize, and I'm going to use a really horrible example here because not all politicians are born this way, but when we generalize, people think we're a politician. We're not necessarily giving the whole truth. It may not even be true. It allows our audience to question the validity of it. Is the person speaking to me, have they just made this thing up? Right? Specificity creates connection and credibility. It doesn't mean that every detail has to be specific, but you have to have enough in there that people can believe it to be true, right? When we generalize and we skim over the detail and we don't bring in specifics, what happens is our audience can stay removed and it's almost like they sit back and they become like the assessor and the judge, right? And they definitely have zero chance of standing in beside you. So specificity creates connection and credibility. Stop generalizing. They, who are they? Street, what street? Town, what town? Where were you? Was the sun shining? Was the moon out? Be specific about the details. Number six is you need to name the characters. So ideally, you actually should name yourself and one other person, or if it's not your own story, two characters. And that is for two reasons. We need to set up tension between characters, but also Harvard research tells us that simply by naming a second character, the ability for our audience to remember our stories and our information goes up by more than 60%. That is phenomenal. We must name the characters. You don't have to name all of them, but you must name at least you and one other, or at least two, if it's not your personal story. So that's number six. Number seven is ignite the senses. Use words which explain what you see, what you feel, what you hear, what you touch, what you smell, be careful with that one, and what you taste. Use words that describe those things. What is it that you're seeing? What is it that you can feel inside? What is it that you're touching? What can you hear both around you and internally? What is it that you can smell? What are the tastes? Use your words to ignite the senses. The more that you can ignite the senses in your audience, the more that they will lean into it and the more that they will put themselves in beside you. Now, I did laugh about smell. You have to be very careful with smell. Smell is a very powerful provocateur, if you like. It is a very powerful sense. So if you ignite the wrong sorts of smells in an audience, they may actually move away from you as fast as they can. So do just be very careful with that. But when you use your words to deliberately ignite the senses, it does create a completely visceral response for your audience. So that is that one. Number 7, ignite the senses. Number 8 is a time as a setup phrase. You use it to accelerate learning and understanding and allowing people to put themselves into a specific period of time. So if I say it's 1927, we know it's decades in the past. We all have a representation in our own mind of what that means. If I say it's 5 p.m. on a Sunday, we all know what our 5 p.m. on a Sunday looks like. If I say it was the start of World War I, if I say it was the opening match of the 2020 Soccer World Cup, if there's all these things that you can say. Give us a date and a time. Give us an era. Give us something that we can hold on to and anchor where this is unfolding. So time is a setup phrase. Time immediately allows you to immediately take your audience to exactly where they need to be. It's a really fast accelerant, right? It allows you to bypass setting up, right? So time is a setup phrase. The next one is truth and accuracy. Every story must be true, but it doesn't have to be accurate. Now, what I mean by this is we don't embellish our stories and we don't make them up. Every story must be true, but they don't have to be accurate. And what I mean by this is we may not tell them in chronological order. We may not tell all the detail. The waiver to that is if you are admitting to manipulate perception, then that is different. But if you're simply telling the parts of the story that are relevant, that's okay, so long as they're true. The next one is about truth and accuracy. All stories must be true, but they don't have to be accurate. Let me explain this a little bit further. So when I say all stories must be true, that's self-explanatory. They must be true. We can't embellish them. We shouldn't diminish them either. And they must actually be true. They must have happened. We don't make them up. But they don't have to be accurate in the telling of them. The simplest way to explain this is to think about movies that quite often open at the end scene and then wind you back, or books that open with the middle of the story and take you in both directions. A story doesn't have to be accurate means that we don't have to actually tell it in the order in which it happened. It does have to be true. Every bit that we tell has to be true. We may actually not tell all of the detail. The waiver to that is we only eliminate detail because we're actually speaking into the message that we're landing. If we're eliminating detail to manipulate an outcome, then that's different. We don't have to tell all the detail. We don't have to tell it in order of it happening. We can start in the middle and go to the beginning. We start in the end and go to the beginning. We can start in the beginning and go to the end. So it doesn't have to be a chronological unfold, but every single story that we tell must be true. The detail must be true, but it doesn't have to be accurate in the way that it unfolded, in the way that we tell it. Really important one. The next thing is watch our language. Eliminate the fluffs. Get rid of words like hopefully, maybe, I'm hopeful, my wish is. Get rid of all those words in your storytelling, and especially when you're actually instructing. Using those words actually diminishes your authority accidentally. Don't say hopefully. Say I believe. Say I know. Own your space, especially if you're a subject matter expert. The amount of people who are putting themselves forward as a subject matter expert or to build their business who say, I wish, I hope, maybe, stop it. Eliminate the fluff. Own the things. Don't say hopefully. Don't say maybe. Don't say I wish, right? Use words like I know, I believe, I trust. This is what I know to be true, what I have discovered, what my experience has revealed to me. Don't ask people to hopefully understand what you're saying. Don't tell people that you wish they had a better future. Own what it is that you know to be true and eliminate the fluff. Now, the last two are all about speeches themselves, not necessarily just the individual stories, but we do cover this off with storytelling. The first one is don't abdicate your power on stage. So quite often when we're using research or data or other people's work, we're actually using it so strongly that the audience becomes interested in the work of that person, not interested in your work. This is particularly relevant when we are subject matter experts and our work is research-based. So if we give too much credence to other people's work, we lose our own voice. We become invisible in amongst it. And this also shows up when people are working and living with imposter syndrome, because we believe that we have to bring in other people's work and research and findings for us to be credible. And it actually does the very opposite. It makes you invisible. It diminishes your own power. It actually becomes all about the work of others and not about yourselves. So even when you are using an incredible piece of research or data or other people's work, make sure that you're actually unfolding story and speeches around it that actually share why this matters for your work, share why, how this supports your insights, rather than just actually speaking to that research. So that's the first one when it comes to general speeches. The next one when it comes to actual speeches is wrapping up quotes. And what I mean by this is, quite often we'll throw to a quote from someone that we really admire. And that is a really powerful way of sort of positioning yourself beside someone who thinks the same way as you, but has a higher profile. And in some rooms, we're actually encouraged to do that. It's called stealing magic powers. But if you don't surround that in a story, then the truth is that it sounds like you're apologizing, right? And it also deflects attention to somebody else. So if you are going to use a quote from somebody else, have it land exquisitely amongst your stories or amongst your speech in a way that speaks into what this quote means for you, where you were when you first discovered it, what it validates about what you just shared. Put a story around it so that we actually don't just get the quote in somebody else's strength and positioning. We also get yours, and it simply becomes, it shifts the quote to having a supporting role. So these are the things that I wanted to share with you in this very quick episode that we have. These are the secrets of story activation. Bring these into the way that you build your stories and your overall speeches, and you will land powerfully in the minds and the hearts of your audience because you have activated within them a visceral emotional response, and you've allowed them to lean into and trust you because you've given them something that is completely 100% trustable.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Speaker Driven Business. And if you have, I'd love you to do two things for me. Number one, subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And number two, leave a review so other people can find and enjoy the content we share. Online, you can find us on Instagram and connect with me personally on LinkedIn. Just head to anygiventuesday.com.au and you will find all the connection points there. Speaker Driven Business is the show making speaking driven strategies accessible to everyone, and I am honored you tuned in.